Hello, I'm Bill Sisson, the Executive Director of WBCSD North America, and welcome to another edition of Transformative Leadership in Business. I'm joined today by Hugh Welsh, President of DSM Firmenich North America. Hugh, thank you for joining me today.
Thanks for your invitation, Bill. I've been looking forward to this all week.
Well, look, in today's discussion, we really want to explore the way in which business leaders are positioning their sustainability efforts with stakeholders, particularly those that can create or reduce friction in achieving a company's performance and sustainability goals. At WBCSD, we see sustainability in a state of transition where it's become an expectation rather than an option, and where it's ever more important to frame the risks and material reasons why this matters for the company, going well beyond virtue signaling. Hugh, I'm looking forward to getting into this with you today. We've had the chance to be together at some recent sustainability events, and I really became fascinated by the leadership you're exhibiting in perhaps some of the most challenging times we've faced in corporate sustainabilities and our 30-year history at WBCSD. Before we get into this, share with our audience a little bit about yourself and what I think is your now 21 years at DSM Firmenich. So how about unpacking that for us?
For me, it's been a pretty wild ride, very exciting. Don't tell anybody, particularly my boss, but I would have done my job for free. It's been such an adventure. And you know, I've been with the company 21 years now, going on 22. When I joined, it was this company called DSM, this Dutch headquartered company that I had never heard of before. And I said, you know what, why not? And I immediately fell in love with the businesses they're in nutrition and food, and today now in perfumery and beauty. And the part I really fell in love with was the mission and strategy of the company, which was to make the world a better place. And so our entire strategy is designed around sustainability goals, sustainability initiatives. We're a publicly traded company. We spend hundreds of millions of dollars a year on R&D, but it's all geared towards trying to solve some of the world's biggest problems. It's hard not to have a good day when you're in that kind of business.
That's amazing. And I think 127 years, I think this company's been around.
DSM actually stands for Dutch State Mines. We like to look at that a little bit like our original sin. We started out as a coal mining company in the Netherlands. I think that gives us some street cred at times when I'm trying to talk to stakeholders and policymakers here. But of course, we've evolved over the century into the company we are today, about as far removed from coal mining as you can get.
Let's pick up on that little hint you gave us. You've had the opportunity, as you and I've spoken, to get engaged with this current U.S. administration and even been invited back, which I think you must be doing something right there, Hugh. You've shared with me that you've actually been able to get some traction for your company's work in this sort of environment that we find ourselves in. There's a lot of skepticism out there on corporate sustainability these days. And how have you been able to navigate this, Hugh?
I've had the good fortune, and I sincerely mean that, to have the opportunity to be in the White House four times since Inauguration Day, to be in the EPA headquarters, to be in the Department of Energy headquarters. And I'm very empathetic and appreciative of the doom and gloom, I think, that many in the sustainability space feel at the moment in the United States. But I feel completely different. I feel very optimistic and see what we have before us today as an opportunity. Because if we don't find a way to engage with all players on the field, we're never going to find durable, sustainable changes that we need to see in the economy and policy. What we'll be left with is a constant pendulum swinging back and forth between very pro-sustainability, and I'm using words carefully, anti-sustainability. Business can't deploy capital in that kind of environment. Business can't grow in that kind of environment. Business can't invest in R&D in that kind of environment. So when I talk to the folks in the administration, I might not speak specifically about things like climate change. That's a triggering word in some respects. But I'm happy to talk to them about innovation and research and development and the need for more sustainable energy creation. These things resonate very well because I think the folks in the administration certainly see the need for us to create more different types of energy to meet the growing demands for artificial intelligence, for example. They see this as a national security issue. That resonates very well. They see it as a jobs and growth issue. So if you kind of meet people where they are, you'll often find that you have more that you agree with than you disagree with. So I see with maybe some Pollyannish optimism, but an opportunity as well.
I don't think it's Pollyannish at all. And I do 100% agree with you that where we find ourselves in this moment really is an opportunity, because I think it's important for us to get more on board relative to why this matters. I do share that opinion that there is common ground amongst all ideologies when it comes to these issues. I just think it's how we pivot and frame these issues around the business and language of materiality. Maybe just to go a little deeper on that, Hugh, just a little bit deeper. When you think about these topics that you're bringing to this administration, you talk about innovation, R&D, climate, but why is that framing working? And think about it in this context of common ground. Is this the common ground? Are you finding that is the way to get this across?
I don't think people always realize that in Washington, there's a conservative climate caucus with over 80 members, right? There is the bipartisan, bicameral climate caucus in the Senate and the House. There's a lot of folks that are in a position to make policy for the United States that certainly recognize that climate change and sustainability are imperatives. They may see it a different way than others. You know, they might not be so much focused on the net zero and the metrics. They might be looking at other things. But there's a foundation there, an understanding that climate change is real and that we need to do something. And that understanding can be brought to light when you start talking about things in terms of the massive flooding we've seen in different parts of the country, or the wildfires on the West Coast, and all of these challenges that the country is facing. It doesn't help to talk doom and gloom. It helps to talk about solutions. And so I do think, again, that there's a foundation to have these conversations to begin with. I think that there's a very economically motivated, solutions-oriented approach with the administration. So if you come to them with those types of conversations and not doom and gloom and the American people are going to have to go without in order to meet the challenge of the day, they're very amenable to having the conversation. There's also a pragmatic element. I do think that they see that the overwhelming majority of younger voters, regardless of political party, see this as a serious issue. Maybe it's a little cynical, but I guess politics are cynical in some way. Pragmatically, they know that they have to have a position on this. And it was even discussed, I think, if my recollection is correct, at the Republican National Convention last year. So I don't think things are as dire as people feel. We just need to pivot away from the doom and dystopia, away from you're going to have to go without in order for us to meet the challenges, instead of let's look for new and innovative ways to meet the challenges that can help grow rather than shrink our economy and our way of life.
Super helpful. I think this moment is really that opportunity we have to lean into that common ground and to lean into why this matters for business, to lean into it's about managing risk and creating opportunities. It's about driving business performance with the umbrella that the earth is changing. Things are happening that we may or may not understand all of the reasons for, but it clearly is having an impact on how business is navigating some of these challenges. So the virtue signaling is over. Maybe that was the first, 15 or so years of sustainability. It's been shifting into this realization and rationalization of the impact that these issues are having. My organization, WBCSD, is not a lobbying entity. We can't be by design. We're not allowed to be. But we know many of our corporate members have their government affairs teams positioned to work with policymakers in ways that will help and benefit how business transacts in a more favorable way. Our recently released business barometer really makes it clear that companies need these policy signals in order to have the clarity and consistency for navigating sort of the regulatory landscape that we operate in. I wonder, given how you've gotten yourself here and, you're obviously leading the U.S. operations as well as sort of more broadly, but you and your teams are obviously doing something right. Maybe it's just replaying some of the things you've already said, but I'd really like you to think about what advice would you give your peers that are just starting to pop their head up above ground? And what should they do and think differently when they're trying to drive this policy agenda?
I'm always trying to encourage folks to avoid the hyperbole, avoid the drama, and focus on really being authentic. I've found that I myself, and I think a lot of the folks that I speak with, immediately tune you out if you are coming with the hyperbole and all of the drama and the performance art. But if you're authentic and can articulate why this is important to your business, why this is important to the communities within which your business operates, why this is important to your employees, you'll find an audience with anybody, regardless of their political perspective or point of view. So be super authentic. The other is to be consistent. You can't, in my humble opinion, switch narratives with the wind, whatever way the political winds are blowing. Be consistent on what you think is important, what policies you'd like to see in place, why those policies make sense. Because otherwise, we won't end up with the durable policies, legislations, laws that we know we require. You know, an example I look at is the Inflation Reduction Act. When it was first introduced in its original form as the Green New Deal, I was publicly opposed to it. And I got a lot of grief from the climate community. Like, Hugh, you've been speaking on these issues for years. How can you be opposed to the Green New Deal? And I said, look, it's an economic social reengineering piece of legislation wrapped in a climate ribbon because climate sells. That's not what I'm interested in. And then, of course, it didn't really get any traction. It came back in its, I think, more pure climate sustainability related form as the Inflation Reduction Act. And I was the first public company executive in the United States to endorse it. It didn't really have a direct impact on our business, but I like the fact that it was setting up a framework to offer carrots, not sticks, to the business community to drive innovation, drive clean energy adoption, et cetera, et cetera. The problem is, of course, a new administration comes in and things swing back the other way. So what I would suggest is be authentic, not dramatic. Be consistent, not opportunistic, and build relationships. This is not something you can do transactionally. You have to build relationships with people over years, because through those relationships, you have trust. And that trust is, of course, fundamental to having meaningful conversations with people in a position to drive change.
Yeah. Trust in any interaction is so fundamental. I happened to have joined Edelman's Trust Summit earlier this week. And the headline coming out of that is that many of the institutions that people interact with, whether it's governments, business, media, what have you, the trust level is declining. But business leadership still rises to the top, even in a declining trust relationship. So we still have an important role to play in leveraging and perhaps even benefiting from that trust. But to your point, we'll lose it entirely if we fail to, say, be authentic, to be consistent. And I also believe, and I'd love your reaction to this, to be vulnerable, right? And so I think that's the time we find ourselves in, is those three characteristics. I love your authentic, consistent, but also vulnerable. What do you think?
I couldn't agree more. There is no such thing as a successful leader who can't make themselves vulnerable. Same for a corporation. That vulnerability, the humility that comes with that vulnerability, is what invites others to share their opinions in an authentic way and to create a safer environment where you can have an exchange of ideas, because nobody has a monopoly over good ideas. You want to be able to have an open exchange, productive exchange, constructive exchange, not a debate over your side or my side in a tribalistic sense. So I couldn't agree with you more. And I follow the Edelman Trust Survey very closely, as you know. And over the last couple of decades, to see the evolution away from high levels of trust in institutions like academia and media and politics towards big business has been eye-opening to me. I always like to say, with great power comes great responsibility, like Spider-Man. And I encourage folks in the business community to not take their ball and go home right now if they're feeling a little depressed, but instead use this as the real opportunity it is to voice their position, to go talk to their elected officials, to have these conversations with their trade associations, because that's how the relationships get built and that's how change gets made.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. And if there's one sort of fundamental message that I'd like to get out there from this conversation, is listen to what Hugh is doing and how he's doing it. And more importantly, start doing it yourself, because the more voices that raise this up and use and benefit from that broader audience that's interacting on these topics in this way, I think it serves a useful purpose to getting more on board as those pendulum swings will happen. And perhaps to that point, you've made it a couple of times that administrations can come and go, maybe 2 years, maybe one term, who knows? Business, to your point, has to be thinking longer term and more strategic in the longer term than just the next 2 to 4 years. So with that, Hugh, one final question on how you think about, you started back in the beginning about DSM Firmenich's sort of embedding of sustainability in everything it does. But thinking about driving that progress as a business leader in both short and long-term framing for your company, how are you thinking about that, perhaps on a regular basis, so that you're always moving the ball forward?
In the near term, it's relatively easy. We have a articulated strategy from an R&D side, from a new product development side, that's very much geared to bringing new products and services to the market that can help create a more sustainable, a healthier planet. So it's fairly straightforward there. On the operations side, it's all about efficiency. We have a 62-acre net metered solar field, 63,000 solar panels at our Belvedere manufacturing plant that on a day like today in New Jersey, where there's bright sunshine, it can power the whole 500-acre facility. We have similar ones at our Newark facility, our Plainsboro facility, our King Street facility. We're 100% renewable electricity in the United States. You can imagine that gives us a great competitive advantage from a cost perspective. And I could regale you with stories of how our sustainability initiatives have led to lower costs and higher margins. And so a lot of it is bottom up. We have a great sustainability group in North America across all 46 sites. They do an amazing job, but the business case is there for that. And it's very easy to articulate. Longer term, it's really having a conversation with stakeholders, including our own employees, around the fact that business can't survive in a society that fails. We have a responsibility to ensure the continuation of the democratic institutions of clean energy, clean water, clean air, safety, health. All of that is foundational, fundamental to us having a successful business for another 127 years. And so it requires a little more thought, maybe a little more poetry at times, but that longer term thinking around why we do what we do is tied to not just DSM for Manish, but the modest role we play in the larger global economy, but also community.
Your short-term framing was 100% lock on the language of business. Efficiency, competitive advantage, I heard you say, lowering cost, raising margins, higher margins. You know, that's what happens when you really make these investments in sustainability performance. And then that long-term view of business survival, the legacy of the company, the history of the company is driving you to take that responsible long-term view so that not only are we preserving it for ourselves, but we're preserving it for future generations. So amazing, Hugh.
Very corporate Darwinistic perspective, I think, that even Darwin said, it's not the strongest or the fastest that survive, it's those that are most adaptable to change. And so we like to think that our agility and our adaptability in the longer term to all these changes that are happening, sustainable climate, geopolitical, et cetera, has made us such a successful enterprise for so long.
Hugh, time has flown by. It's been a true pleasure hearing what I knew was going to be an incredible and informative discussion that hopefully others can learn from. Before we wrap up, can folks learn more about DSM Firmenich's sustainability efforts and where will they find that? Obviously on your website, any more to share?
Yeah, you could certainly go on our website. You can find quite a bit on YouTube as well. Follow us on social media. We try to be active. We're happy to talk to anybody that wants to exchange ideas or has ideas on how we might do a better job and have a conversation with what we might have to share and offer as well. And certainly continue to be part of organizations like WBCSD because you guys kind of bring it all together at the end of the day and are a great spider in a large web of disparate stakeholders that are really committed to this mission.
I think I've been called worse. But thanks, Hugh. Thank you for being truly a transformational leader in business.
I appreciate the opportunity. Thanks.